Yeah, well, we're talking to Erica Walker, who's in Idaho, in Boise, Idaho, listeners, and we're talking about the book that she and her sisters wrote called, well, Copycat Dishes, the Most Requested Copycat Dishes. And these are all homemade versions of favorite restaurant recipes. It has to have been kind of hard to get these, wasn't it, Erica?
Yes, this is actually a collection over the last 17 years that we've been blogging and then some. So these are recipes that we've been creating for a very long time, and we finally compiled them all into a book to share.
This is you and your sisters. There are four of you?
Yes. Yep, there's
Great.
four of us.
So, but explain this concept. I mean, when you say copycat dishes, these are dishes that you've had in restaurants that you wanted to recreate at home. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. We love eating out at restaurants, but it's fun to come home and make them again for our families or put our own spin on them, and just use ingredients that we know are going into the recipes rather than going to the restaurants and not really knowing exactly what's going into them.
Now, well, one of the things I noted in your book is you said that it's easier getting these recipes now because of the issue of allergies, that the restaurants are more likely to give you the ingredients, which would be preferable to your getting some kind of allergic reaction and costing them more money with health issues, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've noticed it's actually pretty easy to ask the waitresses or the chefs what's in them, and they usually don't ask a lot of questions back. I usually haven't had a lot of problems using that method, going in and trying something and being like, "Oh, what is in this?" Or when I'm looking at the menu, saying, "Oh, what is in this?" And they're usually really willing to share the ingredients that are in them.
Well, you have instructions on how to get these recipes, and I mean, it struck me just watching them prepare you if it's something done in front of you, and it took me back to trying to get recipes out of my grandmother, and my grandmother, of course, was that era where she never wrote down recipes. And getting her to specify measurements was like a nightmare. Because it's a handful of this, a sprinkle of that, that kind of thing. But you have some clear-cut guidelines, including you need to grill your server. Now, are they? I mean, you have to watch carefully if they're doing it in front of you, but a lot of stuff's done in the kitchen and behind the scenes. But it's not easy. I don't know how you did this.
Well, some of the ones that are watching, one of the really popular ones that we have is the tableside guacamole that we had that we all love. And every time we go to the restaurant, they'll just come and bring everything out on the cart and they'll make it in front of you. And so we just kind of watched, just kind of approximately how much they put in of everything. And one thing that we noticed was green Tabasco sauce that they just did like five or six shakes. And I was like, oh, that's what really adds that really nice Tabasco-y flavor, but it's the green Tabasco sauce which stood
I've
out to
never
me. So
seen
it's just
green
kind of noticing
Tabasco.
those details.
Yeah, I've never seen green Tabasco sauce.
Oh, it's
I mean.
delicious. It's mild and just has a little bit of that jalapeno flavor.
Wonderful. And of course, you have to have background in order to do this. You have to know, like different standouts in different geographical cuisines and cultures. You can contact the website for a menu online. Most of them list the recipes, or most of them list the dishes, and then you have to figure it out. knowing your herbs and spices, all those things come into play. But you still had to fiddle a lot when you were trying to reproduce at home. I mean, people didn't just hand you a recipe, right?
Right. A lot of the times it's just an ingredient list and then just trying the recipe over and over, trying the dish over and over and saying, you know, something like, you know, this just seems like it does have cumin, but really just a very, very little bit. Or saying, you know, the cumin really is the star of this dish. We definitely want to add more. So it's just a lot of trial and error when making these recipes.
Well, now, are you an experienced cook and your sisters? Are they all experienced cooks?
You know, we all grew up cooking with our mom in the kitchen. We all helped with dinner ever since we were a really young age. None of us have a professional cooking background, but a lot of it is just a love for cooking and just doing it a lot. And now for our own families, we're in the kitchen every day cooking. And we have gone and learned from professional chefs, but not going to actual culinary schools.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you decide your book says most requested dishes. I mean, how did you find out what are the most requested dishes?
You know, a lot of it is just talking to our audience. We have a large email list, and we also have some large social media followings, and so we'll go on our email lists, and we'll ask our viewers, we'll say, hey, what are some recipes that you guys want? And we get really great feedback from them,
both
on social media and through our email list. And so a lot of this is compiled because of our viewers saying, ah, I went to this restaurant, this was so good, is there any way that you can recreate this? And we just add it to the list of things. We add it to our recipe to-do list.
How long have you been collecting recipes?
Oh, man, for as long as I can remember, from before college even, I remember even in high school collecting recipes. And I worked at a restaurant, actually, when I was in high school, started working at a pizza restaurant when I was 15. And I loved being back in the kitchen and watching the chefs create the different pizza and pasta dishes. And I would, you know, write them down so I could go home and make them at home because I loved the restaurant so much.
Yeah. Well, let's get really specific here. I mean, like, you don't just say, I'm looking at this copycat Arby's sauce. I have another question, too. Some of your recipes say inspired by, and others don't have inspired by. What is the difference?
A lot of those are actually copyright issues.
Oh,
so we can't claim that we have the actual recipe just due to copyright issues.
Yeah, well, I don't know, from my career, I noticed that all you have to do is change one ingredient and you don't violate a copyright. Is that what you found out?
Yes, and actually, recipes themselves can't be copyrighted. It's actually the copyright with the company. So calling something, you know, Olive Garden Alfredo, we can't claim that it's the exact Olive Garden Alfredo recipe, even if we have the exact amounts of all of everything that is in the recipe. So the copyright issue actually comes from the name, not so much the recipe, because recipes themselves can't be copyrighted. That's why a lot of places, you know, like all the secret ingredients and the Dr. Pepper recipe, you know, they keep that under lock and key. Nobody knows that exact recipe because it couldn't be copyrighted.
That's still true, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. There are a couple of recipes like that that nobody really knows. What am I thinking about them? Oh dear, very, very famous.
KFC,
recipe.
I know they keep their herbs and spices under pretty lock and key.
Yes.
Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how did you select? What were your criteria for selecting what recipes you're going to include?
I think it really just comes down to our favorites. Ones
uh-huh.
that we've tried and made and that we really love the most.
Which one did you have the most trouble nailing?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, some had to be harder than others.
Yeah, some are definitely harder than others. Possibly the cheese, some of the Cheesecake Factory ones, the chicken Madeira. That one was a little bit harder to nail down. That took more trial and error. One of them that was really tricky, that actually took me a long time to do, was the Taco Bell seasoned beef. Because it's not so much the flavor of the Taco Bell beef, but the texture. And it's hard because Taco Bell uses a lot of preservatives, so it's getting that same taste and texture without, you know, all those complicated ingredients that they add in there for food preservation and keeping it fresh, but also retaining the taste and texture. So that one was actually a tricky one.
Now, what about Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah.
The Harry Potter. I love that recipe, and we make that every year around Halloween time. My kids love Harry Potter, and we actually visited the Harry Potter land at Universal Studios in California all together as sisters. We all went together, and we tried the butterbeer, and we were like, we could totally duplicate this. This just tastes like cream soda with a few other ingredients, and we came home when it was still fresh on the mind, and we were like, let's duplicate this. So that one was actually a pretty easy one because we could all figure out those tastes pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, yeah. We've been to the, what was the name of the station in London, rather?
King's Cross.
Yeah, King's Cross.
King's Cross Station is what, and a particular platform in King's Cross where Harry and his colleagues used to take off for summer vacation on the train.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
The line was huge, long, and it had as many adults as children.
Yeah, we were just there to make sure that our grandchildren didn't run away.
Did you duplicate the presentations also? I mean, I'm looking at this white chocolate raspberry bundt cake. I mean, is that what the restaurant served it as, looking like that?
Yes, it does look like that. They don't frost the entire cake. It's just kind of these lines of frosting that come from the inside of the cake to the outside, and then the inside of that bundt cake hole is filled with frosting. And that's how they serve it at the Nothing Bundt Cake store.
And now, did you actually go on a Carnival cruise to get the chocolate melting cake?
Yes, we did. That's one of the big reasons we like the Carnival cruises, just to get the melting cake. It's so delicious.
Oh, it looks delicious. It looks like that dessert that Peter used to like. I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't called melting cake, but...
Molten something or other. It was.
But
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember the rest of it.
Molten chocolate is what it was, yeah.
I was rather surprised by the Alice Springs entry.
I didn't see that one. Where is that?
Didn't I get that right?
From the Outback Steakhouse?
At the Outback Steakhouse, but
Outback. Well, that's Australian. No wonder, yeah.
Well, yeah, I wanted to add something for our guest, just for the hell of it, because not everything translates across cultures. So you would think, well, maybe with the Outback Steakhouse version of whatever it is, you did that. But suppose you wanted something really off the wall, you can't have a burger in Australia unless it has a layer of, what am I looking for now?
I don't know. I don't think I know about this. Is this a burger? I missed the recipe. Alice Springs.
It's not particularly. What I'm clutching for doesn't necessarily involve Alice Springs, although it must one way or another, I guess. But the two vital ingredients in an Australian burger are fried egg on top, and in the middle there somewhere, there's beetroot.
Beetroot. Beets.
So you start with beets. You add the meat. You add the fried egg, and bingo.
How did I miss that? Living there, we lived in Australia. How did I miss that?
You don't care for some of the things that are less than obscure.
So I just never had it. Huh?
So you just never. I would never have bought it for you because I would know. I would have known for sure you would hate it. Now these gals in Utah or Idaho, you can just take what I just said and call it the Aussie burger.
That actually sounds delicious. I love a fried egg on a burger. I think that makes it so good.
I love fried eggs on everything. I really do.
You have to be a little careful that you don't wear it.
Yeah. So, Erica, go ahead, Robin.
No, it wasn't important.
It's okay. Go ahead.
It still wasn't important.
Okay.
I was thinking about Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, and the oddest thing is, I'm surprised that you gave such prominence to KFC, but KFC is the big fast food in England. Why?
Oh, really?
I have no idea. Why? I have no idea, but it does.
Yeah, I was sort of interested in the fact that most of these recipes would not be anything you'd find out in a celebrity kitchen. I mean, it's mainly pedestrian stuff from accessible kitchens and restaurants. I mean, did you try duplicating any high-end stuff?
I would say most of it is. A lot of it is chain restaurants, but some of them are local restaurants that we really love that we felt that our readers and viewers would really love. So some of them are from local restaurants. As I mentioned, the guacamole is from a really nice restaurant here in Boise called Barbacoa. And
Barbacoa.
That's not a chain restaurant. It's just here in Boise, but it's delicious that we included the recipe because we thought it was a good fit. So some of them aren't chain restaurants. We have some in here from Disney restaurants, that are one of a kind. The Carthay Circle restaurant, I guess, could be considered a little more high end. But most of them are going to be from chains that people mostly know, because, again, this is requested from our readers and viewers.
I see. So that's the process. You put out a call for them to request recipes.
Yes, correct. Either through email or social media, and then they can, I mean, they've been writing into us for over 17 years asking us for different kinds of recipes to try and make from different restaurants that they want to make at home.
Well, with four of you, I'd be really interested in how you, the dynamics of getting a consensus as to what to include in this book.
Well, we just kind of coordinate together. We do lots of phone calls together and try and decide, you know, which ones we think will be best in the book. Some of us were adamant on some recipes, and some we decided, you know, maybe that doesn't quite fit what we're going for, and we would take it out. But a lot of it is just coordinating together. We talk a lot. We talk every single day. We're really close as sisters.
But you're not in the same location even.
Right. There's two of us in Idaho, one in Seattle, and one in Utah.
Wow. So that's quite a span there. Well, have you had any feedback? I mean, is this a book that everybody was dying to get?
Yeah. I mean, we've already had some good feedback. Our publisher's gotten back to us for people that they've sent the book out to that really enjoy it. And some of these recipes, they are on our website, and they're some of our most popular recipes. So we've gotten actual feedback from a lot of our readers who've really enjoyed a lot of these recipes.
Well, you might as well give us your website address so people can check it out.
Oh, absolutely. Our website is called Favorite Family Recipes. And the actual URL itself is fave, F-A-V, as in favorite, and then familyrecipes.com.
F-A-V, family.
Recipes.com.
Well, I think you must feel a great deal of satisfaction because there's a lot of work that went into this.
Yes.
Over a period of a long time, I imagine, too. But it's nice that you're all so close that it didn't cause any familial rifts.
No, we all love food and we all love cooking. That's one thing we all agree on.
and you give great credit to your mother as well.
Yeah.
Yep, she is the inspiration for it all. She is the one who instilled the love of cooking in all of us. She's the glue that holds us all together.
Wow. Anyhow, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And thanks remotely to your sisters who weren't able to be on the call. Again, listeners, it's Family Favorites Copycat Dishes. And if you're craving something from a well-known restaurant, look up here. I mean, if you're hooked on Panera Bread, there's a recipe in here from Panera Bread. If you're hooked on Arby's, there are recipes from Arby's. And just about any restaurant that you can name. Well, congratulations on a well-done project, Erica Walker, and keep up the good work.
One more thing before we hang
up. Okay, go ahead.
The exact spelling of the URL.
Oh, it's F-A-V, family, recipe.
Can you write this down for me, love?
Hello.
It's
F-A-V, familyrecipes.com.
Okay.
Great. Again, thank you, Erica, and good luck on this and your next project as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys are awesome. It's been a delight.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
listeners, we're talking to Zehra Alibai about her book called Bismillah, or maybe she can correct me on that, which translates
Bismillah.
Let's eat. Well, that's a good introduction to this cookbook. tell us what the title means. Why did you title it Bismillah?
Yeah, so Bismillah, like you had said, it's like a blessing. As Muslims, we say Bismillah, similar to how people say grace before they start eating. We just start with intention in whatever we're doing, just starting with a blessing, being blessed with the food that we've been given, and the food that you're eating it with intention to, you know, be healthy, whether you're feeding your family, feeding your loved ones. So it's all about, you know, understanding how blessed we are to have the food and starting with intention.
Right. You sure have a good-looking family.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
It looks like you're feeding
very kind
yourself.
Of you to say.
Well, I mean, you know, we got a lot of pictures in the cookbooks of the authors that having the whole family together in a picture is a great way to open a cookbook.
Oh, thank you very much. And you know what? My love of cooking came from, you know, coming from a immigrant parents who, you know, worked so hard to get us settled here in Canada. I don't think they were very comfortable with saying, I love you, but we always had the most delicious meals on the table. And I think that that's translated into how I show my love for my family is through food and cooking their favorite dishes.
Yeah, no, but you have a fitness and wellness background as well, right?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Could you be specific about what that is?
Yeah, so I studied kinesiology in university, and that my dream was to be a physiotherapist or work with a sports team and be their athletic trainer. But fitness and sport was always something I'd always loved and always knew I wanted that to be a part of my life. So I trained as a personal trainer, and I've done one-on-one training. I teach boot camp, CrossFit classes, and it just tied in well when I was teaching my clients how to eat healthy. I realized that a lot of them didn't really understand that they could eat healthfully and it could be delicious. It didn't just have to be bland chicken breasts and broccoli to be healthy. It could be delicious, you know, flavorful foods as well. And I just saw how the two combined together so well about being active and moving our bodies and also nourishing our bodies and eating foods that we really enjoy and feel good eating.
That's great. I mean, I've kind of turned my gym into, I mean, I've been training with the same trainer since the mid-80s.
Oh, that's amazing. I love, so you're still training?
Oh, yes.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I love it.
I sort of turned the gym. I mean, she owns the gym, but I sort of turned it into a food station as well. I mean, somebody makes a chicken chili and brings it in, and somebody makes
I love that.
Wedding
love that.
Soup. It's really hysterical.
Oh,
and I get all kinds of samples, of, you know, food samples because of the podcast, and I take them in. So it just seems funny that a fitness place becomes also a nutrition place.
A food place. That's lovely. It becomes a place of sharing.
Right.
How did you get to Canada? Not exactly.
So I was. Yeah, so I was actually the first in my family to be born in Canada. My parents moved from Kenya. My parents were from Nairobi. They lived in Mombasa and Nairobi. So they moved here in the early 70s, and then my brother and sister were also born in Nairobi, and then they moved here, settled, and then I was born. I was the first Canadian born. My dad always says, the first Canadian born in the family. Lived in Canada ever since, but been lucky enough to go back and visit our extended family that's still in Mombasa and Nairobi, and that kind of brought a love for food too. Was like all these foods that my parents were cooking, I got to see like the origins of where they came from and seeing my aunts cook it in Africa, and you know, it was really lovely to kind of see that connection to food. And I think, you know, as my parents coming to a new country and, you know, really trying to adapt, I think food was a way for them to always feel kind of, you know, they were still connected to home as well.
Is there a large concentration of Indian origin people in Africa?
In East Africa? Yeah, there is. There definitely is, yeah. I think they, to be honest, I don't have my, you know, the history correct, but they, my parents, my grandparents, my great parents, there were quite a few generations in East Africa that had come from India, generations, and so they had really established communities. And even now, when you go back, there are quite a few. They're you know, like they've integrated into society. My parents spoke Swahili. You know, it was very much. It feels like home to them, because even a lot of the dishes in the book are a combination of some Indian dishes, but they have that. You can tell it has the hint of East African,
yes.
The coconut, or adding certain things into it. So even when I share my recipes online, people will know directly, like, wait, you're Indian, but I can tell from that dish that you have roots in East Africa. And it's really amazing to kind of see that connection, like certain dishes that you'll mention, people will know automatically that, oh, you know, they have similar origins.
There was a huge migration, right? From,
yes,
from,
I think.
From one British colonial situation to another one.
Exactly. And I think it had to do with railroad.
It wasn't exactly the easiest place to develop a relationship with society in general.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if I'm recalling correctly, the famous Indian philosophy, you call him that, Gandhi, was actually from your part of the world.
Ah, okay. So yeah, my ancestors originally are from Gujarat, and then a lot of them did move and migrate to East Africa.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The movement of people, and then the following, the movement is of all your, I'm looking at your kitchen staples. I guess that would make an impact the local culture in Africa and also in Canada. But Canada is so cosmopolitan. I love Toronto,
exactly.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. I love that. And that's the beauty of it is, you know, a lot of people have migrated to Canada, wanted to start, a life for their families and, but still wanted access. When my parents came here, you know, they would kind of like, you know, buy a huge thing of basmati rice and split it amongst different families, or, you know, would bring spices because they couldn't find it. But now, you know, like you can go into a specific Asian grocery store, you can find an East African grocery store, you can get the specific things that you're looking for. And that's the beauty of Toronto, honestly. Even just going out and eating, you can find all different types of cuisine, which is lovely.
Yeah. You're one of the few cookbook authors that lists in kitchen tools an air fryer. Are you sold on the air fryer?
I am, to be honest. It's just become popular, but to have someone who has teenage kids, air fryers have come in super handy. It's something that they can use. It's easy. It's quick. Even if we want to whip up something quick, I find that, tools like that, instead of cranking up the whole oven and using up all this electricity, I think people are trying to be a lot more conscious and aware of, you know, saving energy. And an air fryer is a great way. And it's something simple enough that my teenage kids can pop on. I'm not worried about them, you know, hurting themselves.
Your teenagers cook, huh?
Yeah, they love food. They do. My son especially,
you know,
he loves cooking.
Our grandkids cook too, and they're teenagers.
Yeah.
And I think
it gives them a
surprised.
Sense of independence.
And that, I guess that's probably it.
And I think, to be honest, the way things are now with social media, I think they see normal people cooking. It's not like it's a chef cooking on TV. They see on Instagram and TikTok just regular people cooking. They might see people their age cooking, and it doesn't seem as intimidated. So is as intimidating, so they might be more likely to try something. And I find that that's kind of where, like, you know, they'll show me an idea that they saw a video of, and they're like, well, I want to try and make this. I'm like, go for it. Like, I think that it's having that access to, you know, find different recipes to try too.
Well, one of the things I like about your book is that you have some of these basic recipes that if you want to get seriously into Indian flavor, you should know how to make. And, that's hard to you do it right up front in the very beginning of the book. You don't do it in the end. I mean, I don't see how all these people can cook from books that don't do these basics up front like you do, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
you have to
you.
Know what you're
thank
going
you.
For.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just about having the right spices. You know, in a lot of Indian dishes, there's, you know, we use garlic ginger paste. So I show you how to make that right off the beginning. Green chutney is a great thing to add to, you know, add that extra depth of flavor to your curries or even just putting it on a wrap. And yeah, sometimes just knowing how to make these basic things, it can sometimes feel intimidating, but that's, you know, I grew up coming home from school and having my mom and grandma sitting on the kitchen table peeling garlic so that they could make, you know, jars of garlic paste so that they can just quickly have it on hand when they're cooking dishes. So again, I feel like, you know, these are things that I love that I do myself as well, because I just feel like it's a nice way for me to remember my grandma and like these traditions that, you know, my kids can see me doing, and the kids walk into their my mom's house, their grandma's house, right, and they can tell what she's cooked based on the smell that's coming from the kitchen, and they get so excited and they roll their sleeves up and they eat their rice and curry with their hands. And I love that. I think for them to have pride in their culture and in their traditions, I think is so important.
How common is green mango pickle?
It's pretty, so that's a little bit more, you know, like it takes a little bit more time to do, but my mom always has some type of pickle in her fridge to go with an omelet, to go on a sandwich, to go beside a rice and curry dish, to have just with some naan and yogurt. It's very common, and you'll find that in a lot of Indian South Asian households to have those pickles and chutneys.
Well, you know, you have the largest section of breakfast in a cookbook that I've seen in a long time. Oh. You must be very fond of that meal.
I do. I love breakfast. And again, because I love the, you know, like the chia seed pudding and the pancakes and a regular omelet, but I also, like Indian breakfasts are so delicious. And I just think of, you know, weekends and sitting around the table as a family when everyone finally gets the chance to sit together as a Saturday and Sunday morning, right? And so I want people to really enjoy time around the tables with their families. And breakfast, I think, sometimes can be so busy. So if you can do that and have some healthy breakfast and enjoy time with your family on the weekends, that's perfect.
Rapid, did you see this photo of the saffron oatmeal? It's mouth-watering. It's just gorgeous.
Were, you know, things I didn't understand that, you know, my mom's like, saffron calms you down, and you know, sometimes she'll put a little bit of ground cardamom in it. And it's just the beauty of, like, you know, even like I have a turmeric milk, and now all turmeric is all the rage. And my mom's like, since you were young, we've been giving you turmeric. Like, you know, so it's just seeing a lot of these traditional food that we use as medicine and healing that, you know, are coming into like health and wellness right now as well.
Oh yeah. We're crazy about turmeric.
It's amazing.
We started putting it in, chicken soup from a Yemeni recipe.
It's a
recipe from Yemen. And
the recipe we used, the chef was U.S. based, I'm sure, but he didn't deal with the cuisine of his mainland, I guess. I mean, I don't really know what the cuisine is of Yemen. Probably isn't all that nice, I suspect.
Well, listen, for my breakfast tomorrow, may I request potato curry with eggs?
You're going to love it.
Yeah, it looks wonderful.
I didn't know until we went to a big food event in New York City. One of the things the Americans live is also loved by everybody, I guess. Potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
the staple.
Yeah, I love potatoes.
I didn't know that. And another one was, and this is, I remember the name in the restaurant, it's called Amaya, and it's in London. And one of the big dishes on their menu was liver.
Ooh.
Which I love, and my mother used to serve it all the time.
Grew up in England.
Yeah, well, even I remember when we had visited family in East Africa, they had things like, liver, they had liver in their curry and just different things. And I think, you know, you have to be resourceful and use up all the different parts of the animal.
I love some of your titles here. Your main green tuna salad soup, which I thought that was very cute.
Yeah, and again, a lot of these recipes come from me wanting to incorporate healthy ingredients for my kids, and if I can call it a mean green tuna salad and add some stuff to it that adds more nutrients to it and can kind of, like, you know, normal tuna salads are packed with mayo and, you know, so yeah. Took out a little bit of mayo, added in some avocados, so you get that creaminess. Again, I love my coriander and my cumin, and so added a little bit of that. But yeah, trying to have it, you know, make it very fun and accessible for everybody as well.
You know, I'm looking here at the loaded sweet potatoes. and tuna kebabs look wonderful too. The photographs are so. You should not pick up this book if you're hungry, listeners. Because the food looks so good.
Thank you.
I mean, this pita hummus pizza. We have, that's one of the staples in our refrigerator is hummus.
So lovely. And it's just a fun different way to use it, right? Throw some pomegranate on it. It's
beautiful. So that's a good way to do
that. Exactly. Yeah. And if you're having guests over, it's a really easy, no fuss way. It looks beautiful. It looks fancy, but it's simple to put together.
Yeah, you have a lot of recipes that I think that I don't want to say con because that gives the wrong idea, but I think that they're attractive to your teenagers. I mean, I think
yes.
that, you know, you sneak in a lot of good quality health food into some of these recipes. How about chickpea and potato curry? That sounds good enough to eat. You also like soups. I was so stunned. I love soups too, and I was stunned at our pool club yesterday. This woman was complaining her husband was home making soup for their dinner, and she hates soup.
Oh, wow.
How could you hate soup?
No, you can't. You can't go wrong with soup. And again, living in Toronto, we do get chilly weather, right? It's fall, winter. It's nice to have something warm and hearty.
Right.
And again, you talk about sneaking things in. Soup is a great way to sneak in things. If it's got enough chicken in it, my kids will eat it. If it's, you know, you can pack it with vegetables. You can blend it. You can do a lentil soup that's super simple with pantry staples that you know, like I usually do that when we come back from vacation and there's no produce in the fridge. I can just pop in and make a lentil soup that's really easy. So yeah, soups are really hearty. My dad has always loved soups, and I really love soup. Add a sandwich to it and you're good to go. It's a meal. It's a dinner for sure.
Well, now, are most of these recipes inspired by what you ate growing up? Or, I mean, I'm looking at this one. I would never in a million years have thought of this combination. Roasted butternut squash and beet soup.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever gave you that idea?
I think, a lot of the recipes are inspired by, you know, my childhood and growing up. And but I also love, like, just creating unique flavors. So, you know, I just thought it would be such a pretty color. I love roasted beets. I love roasted butternut squash. You put them together, the soup is such a beautiful color that, again, like trying to get your kids to eat a pink soup. My daughter gobbled it up because it was just so pretty. But you're still getting the nutrients in that as well. Yeah, so, like, some recipes definitely come from experimenting and having an idea in your head and hoping as you put it together it comes out well.
Well, you have a kale salad recipe in here. I've only had one kale salad in my life that I liked. It was in, where was it? It was a New York chef in the South. Anyhow, but I don't understand. I mean, I always had kale growing up. I don't know why it's suddenly very exotic and attractive.
Yeah, it became popular. So the thing I learned about kale was I find that if you cut the leaves small enough and you give it a nice massage
exactly.
with olive oil and salt, it breaks it down and makes it a lot
exactly.
easier. So you know the trick already, yeah. So
that's what the salad did, instead of just throwing these big fat leaves in there.
Yeah.
you do also, I just saw Brussels sprouts. This is unusual. Brussels sprouts and apple salad with maple tahini dressing. Now, that's unusual. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
So, again, that just came from, you know, like another way of adding vegetable, different vegetables. So if you shave up the Brussels sprouts really thin, it almost becomes like a cabbage. And it's almost like a slaw, like a cabbage, like a coleslaw with apple. And then tahini adds like a really fun, different flavor. You can sweeten that up. So it's again, it's just taking the principles of a coleslaw, but switching it up a little bit, you know, adding the sweetness and the creaminess from different things.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember when we were in one of our trips to San Francisco, we were down near the baseball stadium, not that matters to the story. But they served fried Brussels sprout leaves.
Ooh.
But what?
Like chips.
Right. What was that? That was San Francisco.
It was San Francisco. Yeah.
Now, you, one of the stars of your mother's culinary repertoire with her leg of lamb. Could
yes.
you explain to our listeners what's special about this leg of lamb recipe?
Yeah, so leg of lamb is something that, you know, it's kind of like what we pull out on Eid, which is like a huge celebration for Muslims. It's, you know, my mom's specialty when we have family over, you know, we're having a big gathering. And it's basically a huge leg of lamb, and she'll marinate it like a week in advance or a few days in advance with like a yogurt, which will like soften the meat, and she'll add a ton of spices. And then she basically roasts it in the oven for many hours, and the meat becomes so, so tender. But the nice thing is, because of the marination being like yogurt, garlic, ginger, she takes kind of like, she makes a gravy from like what the lamb has been roasted in, and it's like a really rich tomatoey gravy. Mm. And she pours that over the lamb, and then she'll broil it and get it nice and browned. And it's basically just, you know, the lamb falls off the bone. It's so delicious. And then she has it with all her sides.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
And even I remember one.
Two artisanal lamb producers, and the one changed its quality by going too big,
oh, okay.
and the other one went out of business, so I really...
Oh, no. I've had lamb before. It can be dry. This way it stays super moist and juicy, and it really captures...
We're waiting for our invitation to dinner, you understand?
Yes, please. So, next time in you're in Toronto, let me know.
I really think this is special, and I'd like to mention this, that you have a healthy Ramadan guide, appreciating our bodies as a blessing, which is beautifully written and presented.
Oh, thank you.
Do you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, I think I think many people know, and if they don't, Muslims once a year we have a holy month, which is the month of Ramadan, and we fast from dawn till sunset. And even though the whole month is about fasting, it's funny because the main focus is on the food. And so it's, what are we going to break our fast with? What are we going to have right before we start our fast? And it's funny because food becomes the obsession when the idea is like, well, we're actually supposed to take a step back. But traditionally, a lot of times, you know, because you are fasting, when you break your fast, like traditionally you'll have fried things, like you'll have samosa and you'll have really heavy dishes. And I think people were kind of realizing that maybe this isn't the best thing for our bodies since we've been fasting all day, right? And so I just really wanted to offer a twist on it, which is still enjoy the month. Like, you know, a lot of times you break your fast at the mosque with your community, or you'll have a gathering with family and friends, and you know, you have the fried samosa, and you have like, you know, the spring rolls, and you'll have the curry, and you'll have the biryani, which is totally fine, but also making sure you have some healthy things too, because you know, you want to make sure you have a salad or a soup so you're getting those nutrients in. And also, like, as my kids, as they got older, they've started fasting, I was really conscious of like, what can I feed them so that when they are fasting, like, you know, when they're eating, they're maximizing the nourishment that they can get. And so that when you're fasting, you're not feeling lethargic. You're not feeling, you know, hungry because you've only eaten, you know, like five samosas that filled you up when you're eating them, but they're fried and you know, they don't have the nutrients that you need to sustain your fast. So making sure you have foods that are high in nutrients, that are high in water content as well, so that you can stay hydrated throughout your fast. And it was something I'd shared on social media a few years back, and it was such a there was such a positive response to how we can have a healthy Ramadan so that we can enjoy the month as well and not feel so lethargic from fasting and eating heavy and fasting and eating heavy, like how we can feel lighter and how we can enjoy the month. And it had a really positive response. And yeah, I love sharing recipes that, you know, that make it easy for you and your family to, you know, to get through the fast a little bit easier.
Well, Zara, you look, all these photographs of you, you look healthy and like you're having
fun. Thank you so much.
And
thank
comfortable.
You.
And I mean, I like your running around in your sneakers.
Well, I do. I mean, I feel like you guys seem super active, and you need to enjoy life. And I think, you know, you just have you realize that, you know, if you take care of your body and you nourish it properly and you move it and you use it and you know you really appreciate it, then it's there for life, right? We're in these vessels for a very long time, so we might as well give it the best that we can so that we can, you know, reap the best out of it. And it seems like you guys, from all your travels and trying all your different food, you guys have taken that in and are doing it very well.
Well, listeners, you do well to get this book. And there's, you know, sometimes authors say there's something for everyone in it, but you really have quite a lot of stuff for a lot of people in this one book.
Thank you.
So you did a
Thanks.
Great job on it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you for talking to us about it. Again, it's Bismillah, Let's Eat by Zara Alibi.
Perfect.
Alibi. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. And much success with your book, and hopefully
thank
we'll talk
so
to you
much.
Again. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.